the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Public farewell. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. The body of the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg is lying in repose at the U.S. Supreme Court today. Thousands are filing past her flag-draped coffin. Meg Penrose teaches law at Texas A&M University and calls Ginsburg a trailblazer.
She is someone, regardless of political leanings, we can look to for inspiration and just think, I want to be like RBG.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg, just the second woman to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court on Friday. She will become the first woman to lie in state at the U.S. Capitol. 5 p.m. Saturday at the White House, that is when President Trump will reveal his pick to replace Ginsburg. U.S. Senator John Kennedy.
Like it or not, the Supreme Court vacancy has become maybe the most important issue in this presidential race.
Correspondent Peter Alexander.
One of the president's evangelical advisors told me yesterday the vacancy could not have come at a more opportune time for the president, suddenly making the coronavirus, in his words, nothing more than background noise.
There is big debate in D.C. right now over whether or not there's enough time on the clock to confirm the president's pick before Election Day, just 41 days away. Joe Biden is campaigning today in Charlotte, North Carolina. The president will be there tomorrow. Biden has come under fire of late for refusing to announce his own list of potential Supreme Court nominees.
He doesn't want to do it. You know why? Because he can only put super radical left judges on, people that would destroy your country.
The president last night on the stump in Pittsburgh. Britt Hume of Fox News says Biden will be forced eventually to name names when it comes to who he'd like to see on the court.
I don't know that Joe Biden can duck questions on this perpetually.
Biden will get peppered with questions at next Tuesday's first of three presidential debates about a Democratic proposal that would expand the high court to more than nine justices. That's a concept known as court packing. The Kentucky Attorney General announcing this afternoon whether he'll file criminal charges against those police officers involved in the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor. The 26-year-old black paramedic was shot and killed during a botched drug raid in Louisville back in March. Florida's largest school district has just voted to commence with classroom instruction beginning in October. And this teacher in Miami doesn't like that.
Why are we being led to the slaughter? Why are we being the guinea pigs?
The Miami-Dade School Board voted to return kids to the classroom on the same day that the U.S. registered its 200,000th death from COVID-19. Near the Washington Monument in our nation's capital, 20,000 U.S. flags are on display.
Each flag here represents 1,000 who have died from COVID-19.
At last night's campaign rally in Pittsburgh, President Trump put the blame for the virus squarely on the shoulders of communist China, saying, quote, they let this happen. Pharmaceutical giant Johnson & Johnson has entered the third and final stage of coronavirus vaccine development. Former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb says it could not come at a better time.
The concern is that as we get a little bit more complacent, people try to go back to work against the backdrop of the fall and the winter when people are heading indoors. That's a real setup for risk.
Johnson & Johnson has developed a single-shot vaccine, and it's looking for 60,000 volunteers here in the States to take part in Phase 3 trials. Three other drug makers, by the way, also working on a COVID vaccine. A bird strike forced a change of plans at a campaign event yesterday for Vice President Mike Pence. Just a few moments after takeoff from Manchester, New Hampshire, Air Force Two sucked a bird into one of its engines. No one other than the bird was injured. The vice president flew back to Washington on a cargo plane. A legendary Hall of Fame running back has just passed away. Here's correspondent Jim Krasula.
Gale Sayers has died at the age of 77. He was diagnosed with dementia in early 2017, and his wife partly blamed his football career. Nicknamed the Kansas Comet, Sayers was a two-time All-American at Kansas and was selected by the Chicago Bears in 1965. He was later celebrated for his enduring friendship with teammate Brian Piccolo through Piccolo's cancer, depicted in the movie Brian's Song, that marked Sayers as more than a sports star.
And we will have more on the death of Gale Sayers coming up in sports with Sonny. Also ahead this Wednesday afternoon, a local congressman calls out Cuomo. Mail-in voting in Pennsylvania, there's a lawsuit that's just been filed, and 40 days for life in Ithaca. First, let's stop by the Weather Center. Kevin Williams.
Well, a very good afternoon. We're looking at a very lovely day all across the region, and the expectations for the building warmth to continue into the start of the weekend. Forecast details are coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right, Kevin, we will see you then. In the meantime, let's check the headlines across New York and Pennsylvania. New York Congressman Tom Reed called out Governor Cuomo today for suggesting that the National Guard be used at polling places on Election Day.
What's next? We're going to shut down the polls come November 3rd because he's going to issue an order saying that we can't vote on Election Day because some type of emergency, because he's afraid of people doing that. I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, I'm just telling this extremism that the governor in Albany represents has to come to an end. And to see it so flippantly utilized for political purposes is just dangerous.
The governor has also proposed using state and federal election workers to replace local volunteers at polling places on Election Day. Republicans will file suit to try and overturn a mail-in voting decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. In that 5-2 decision last week, the court ruled it is okay to count ballots for 3 days after the election.
The Supreme Court of Pennsylvania feels like they can do the legislators' work, and they're outside the Constitution right now.
State Senator Doug Mastriano says it is the job of the state legislature and not the courts to set the parameters of the election.
Just straight to the Constitution, and the court can interpret the law. They can't create law, and they're not above the law. And obviously, Governor Wolf has trouble understanding this as well.
Mastriano is confident that the GOP lawsuit will eventually be successful at the Third Circuit, or maybe even at the U.S. Supreme Court, if it gets to that. Despite the cluster of COVID cases connected to a church in Chemung County, New York, the county executive there says there are no plans to shut down businesses or schools.
Obviously, we can't stop the spread. What we try and do is flatten the curve or give out good advice as far as the social distancing, facial coverings. If you're sick, stay home. Don't go to school. Don't go to work. I mean, it's the things we've been asking folks to practice since day one. The more tests we give, the more positives we're going to see. There'd be no plans to shut down the county, no.
That's Chemung County Executive Chris Moss. He says COVID cases in three counties now are linked to that church, the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Horseheads. Pennsylvania's new coronavirus notification app has a lot of folks wondering about privacy issues. Privacy expert Alan Butler tells Family Life News.
From a privacy perspective, the Apple Google system appears to do a fairly good job of protecting the anonymity of individuals using the app.
This COVID Alert PA mobile app, as it's known, connects people anonymously through their smartphone.
When you download an app like this one, it's important to understand where it's coming from to make sure that it comes from an official source.
Governor Wolf says it's all about breaking the chain of virus transmission through early notification.
The virus is not done yet. We need to take advantage of all the best tools to make sure that Pennsylvanians stay healthy.
Pennsylvania Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine.
This app puts the control in your hands, and you determine how much, if any, information you share.
The app uses Bluetooth technology to let people know if they may have been exposed to the virus. Health reporter Stephanie Stahl with CBS 3 in Philadelphia.
If an app user tests positive and agrees to notify other users, anyone that was within 6 feet of the infected person for more than 15 minutes will get an alert.
There are a variety of different COVID notification apps that are being launched in a number of states. The more people who use these apps, well, the more effective they are. A school bus accident sent three students from the Odessa Montour New York School District to the hospital this morning. That bus hit a car that had lost control in the town of Odessa. The injuries are said to be not serious. The union representing teachers in Watkins Glen, New York, has filed a lawsuit against that school district. It claims the district is not following state guidelines or even its own policies to protect vulnerable teachers from the coronavirus.
It's my hope that we can settle this quickly and easily. It's sort of a shame that we have to spend this amount of time and money going to these lengths to get things that people need. Just in order to stay safe at their own jobs.
Jeanette Lasko is the union rep at Watkins Glen. She says the lawsuit centers around teachers' ability to work from home. So far this year, there has been one positive COVID case at the high school. Pennsylvania is about to launch its own website to sell Obamacare-like health care policies. This site replaces the federally operated healthcare.gov. Family Life's Terry Diener has details.
The website is called Penny, and lawmakers approved the idea last year in a bid to get more people into it, lower their insurance costs, and save money for the state government. Pennsylvanians can sign up for an account on the website after it goes live, scheduled for later this month. Starting November the 1st through January the 15th, shoppers can look for and buy insurance plans on it. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. The Canadian woman accused of mailing a ricin-laced letter to President Trump will be in court next week in Buffalo. Ricin is, of course, a deadly poison. Reporter Leanne Stuck with WGRZ-TV reads from the note that woman sent the president.
This gift is in this letter. If it doesn't work, I'll find a better recipe for another poison, or I might use my gun when I'm able to come.
Cops say 53-year-old Pascal Ferrier had a loaded gun on her as well as a knife when she was apprehended on the Peace Bridge by Canadian authorities. The French-speaking woman faces federal terrorism charges for threatening the president. Lawmakers are still in charge of drawing Pennsylvania's political maps, but good government groups say a bill making its way through the state Senate would check the most egregious gerrymandering practices and boost public transparency. That map redrawing process will begin in earnest next year. The bill requires lawmakers to hold public meetings and set strict criteria for deciding congressional and legislative districts. The deadline to take part in the 2020 census is next Wednesday, and the city of Syracuse, New York, is making a concerted effort to include as many people as possible in the headcount. Syracuse Mayor Ben Walsh.
10 years ago, we were undercounted, and we've been dealing with the impacts of that for the past decade. And so I don't want to be looking back 10 years from now thinking, what if, and I don't want the community to as well. Now more than ever, we need every federal dollar that we can get.
Census data not only determines how much federal aid a state gets, it also is used to decide how many seats in Congress each state gets. This year is the 24th census. We've been doing it as a country dating back to the year 1790. Ithaca, New York is urging residents to reduce their water use. The call to conserve comes as city officials moderate drought conditions caused by limited rainfall. There is no substantial rain in the forecast, according to Kevin Williams, at least for the next several days. Keeping in Ithaca, a pro-life event is happening there outside the city's one and only abortion clinic. Russ Nitchman is with the 40 Days for Life campaign.
They're doing it all around the country at the same time, and it is not a protest, as some people may see it. It is a prayer time.
Nitchman says over 100 abortion clinics nationwide have been shuttered in the 16-year history of this event known as 40 Days for Life. The prayer event at Planned Parenthood's nationwide ends on the first day of November. It's 14 past the hour. Sports next, the two-minute drill with Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, we start in the NBA, and the Denver Nuggets are back. They beat the Lakers last night, 114-106, behind Jamal Murray's 28 points, but Murray says they should be leading this series.
We feel like we should be up 2-1 right now, to be honest. Well, we're just going to move on to game four.
Lakers lead the series 2-1. Tonight, game four of the East Finals, Miami and Boston, with the Heat leading 2-1. In Major League Baseball, the Braves clinched their third straight National League East title with an 11-1 win against the Marlins. The Indians win in extras.
Hit in the air, deep right center, ankles back, he's out of room, it's out of here! The Indians walk off the White Sox, a stunner here in Cleveland.
Beating the White Sox 5-3, Dodgers claimed their eighth straight National League West title and top seed with a 7-2 win against the A's. In Buffalo, Garrett Cole pitched a gem. Yankees blasted the Blue Jays 12-1. Cole struck out 7 over 7 innings.
Kept trying to get better every time we took the ball. It felt like more often than not we did that. And, it's nice to be finishing strong going into the postseason.
Max Kepler singled in the winning run in the bottom of the 10th. The Twins walked off the Tigers 5-4.
I think just winning the ball games we have in front of us and getting the task done right in front of us.
The Phillies falling apart, dropping a doubleheader to the Nationals, 5-1 and 8-7. That's four straight losses for Philadelphia, but Aaron Nolan says,
It don't matter who's on the mound, we still got to go out and compete. And I feel like we've been competing, things have been falling our way. But we're still taking it game by game. I don't think we're out of anything.
Elsewhere, the Pirates beat the Cubs 3-2, and Pete Alonso homered and drove in 3. Mets beat the Rays 5-2 in Queens. Top story again, Hall of Famer Gale Sayers is passed at the age of 77. Sayers, an All-Pro during the first 5 of his 7 NFL seasons, of course known for his rock-steady friendship with Brian Piccolo, depicted in the film Brian's Song. Gale Sayers was 77. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
One of the all-time greats. Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on the Noon Report, public tributes pour in for RBG, online church in the COVID era, and make room in space for Tom Cruise.
The death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is revealing again just how divided our nation is and just how much abortion has poisoned everything. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. President Trump has promised that his nomination to replace the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg will be announced on Saturday. And now that Senator Mitt Romney has committed to support the process, it looks probable, maybe likely, that Mitch McConnell might succeed in seating a new justice before the November election. Democrats, of course, will fight against this with, to quote Nancy Pelosi, every arrow in their quiver. The death of Justice Ginsburg raises an incredible number of questions on an incredible number of issues, from the rules and norms of Supreme Court nominations to the legacy of this historic member of the court to the future of Roe v. Wade. Earlier this week, Kim Colby, director of the Center of Law and Religious Freedom for the Christian Legal Society, joined me for a special edition of the Breakpoint podcast to talk about each of those questions. You can come to Breakpoint.org to listen, or you can subscribe to the Breakpoint podcast wherever you get your podcast. Justice Ginsburg was a truly historic figure and a pioneer for women's rights and women's equality. A towering intellect who relentlessly followed her worldview, she was among our generation's most effective champions on the political left. Ginsburg's legacy, however, will always be, to quote Kim Colby, very much tarnished by the fact that she equated women's advancement with abortion, something, quote, not good for women or the little girls who are aborted. Ginsburg was very much a protector of the dark and destructive legacy of Roe v. Wade, at least part of which has become the kind of brutal, divisive, and cruel confirmation hearings that we're now all bracing for. As the Heritage Foundation's Ryan Anderson has said, not only are abortion and Roe great evils against children, but they poison our entire political and judicial systems. Now, both Democrats and Republicans will appeal to principle, selective histories, and suddenly important so-called norms in order to blame the other side for the awful vitriol called Senate confirmation hearings. But make no mistake, it wasn't about principle in 2016 when Republicans refused to consider the nomination of Merrick Garland. It's not about principle today when Democrats wish they could refuse to consider the nomination of Ginsburg's replacement. There's nothing unconstitutional about bringing a nominee before the Senate some 40 days before an election, any more than changing the 60-vote rule to 50 or refusing to consider a nomination in an election year. It's never been about principle. It's always been about politics, and our politics have been deeply poisoned by abortion on demand. Amy Coney Barrett, thought to be among the finalists for the nomination, already experienced just how poisonous the nomination process can be when her Catholic faith was attacked by Senator Dianne Feinstein during her confirmation hearings for the Seventh Circuit Court. "When you read your speeches," said the liberal senator from California, "the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you." At a 2006 speech to the graduating class of Notre Dame Law School, Barrett said, quote, "Your legal career is but a means to an end, and that end is building the kingdom of God. If you can keep in mind that your fundamental purpose in life is not to be a lawyer, but to know, love, and serve God, you will truly be a different kind of lawyer." You see, that's that kind of loudly living dogma that so alarms her critics. Catch my conversation with the Christian Legal Society's Kim Colby on the Breakpoint podcast. Pray for the nominee, whoever she is. She will face personal attacks and blistering opposition. But most of all, pray for our nation, especially for the lives that are at stake. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Thank you, John. We are coming up at 20 past the hour now. Time to check weather with Kevin Williams.
Here is your Family Life weather forecast. Our call for this afternoon, mostly sunny and warm, the high temperature in the 70s. Tonight, some clouds develop after a mainly clear evening, low temps 50s. Tomorrow, mix of clouds and sunshine, maybe a brief shower in the afternoon, high in the 70s to near 80. And Friday's mostly sunny and warm with a high temperature in the mid-70s to the lower 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you kindly. This here is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price. Here's what's going on this Wednesday, the 23rd of September. The public tribute to the late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg began this morning in Washington, D.C. at the U.S. Supreme Court. Chief Justice John Roberts says when Ginsburg was a child, she dreamed of being an opera star.
She was not an opera star, but she found her stage right behind me in our courtroom. There she won famous victories that helped move our nation closer to equal justice under law, to the extent that women are now a majority in law schools, not simply a handful.
Thousands are filing past the casket of the woman known simply as RBG. The late justice will lie in repose on the steps of the High Court for the next 2 days. Correspondent Jan Crawford.
Typically, a justice will lie in repose inside the Supreme Court, but because of the coronavirus, it'll be outside, and everyone will be required to maintain social distancing and wear a mask. She also will lie in repose longer than is usual for a justice. There are going to be thousands of people here, so it's decided that that extra day was necessary.
The President and First Lady Melania Trump are among those paying their respects. On Friday, Ginsburg will become the first woman ever to lie in state at the U.S. Capitol. Senate Democrats crying foul over the way Republicans plan to replace Ginsburg. Here's Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
This vacancy would lock in this hard right agenda for a generation.
Schumer accuses the president of stealing the Ginsburg seat. On Saturday at 5 p.m., we will learn who the nominee is to replace the late justice. A lot of folks have their eye on a pro-life mom of seven who sits on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals.
Amy Coney Barrett is preferred by a number of the key senators in this case.
48-year-old Amy Coney Barrett met with the president at the White House earlier this week. The president is hinting that New York State, one of the blue states in the country, could be in play for him this election year. New York hasn't voted Republican since 1984.
I love that place so much, and it's so sad to see what's happening to New York. We're going to make a little bit of a play for New York.
The president lost New York by 23 points to Hillary Clinton in 2016, although he did win 46 of the state's 62 counties. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson announcing a coronavirus crackdown today as COVID cases double each week in the UK.
Early closing for pubs, bars, table service only, closing businesses that are not COVID secure, expanding the use of face coverings, new fines for those that fail to comply.
The pandemic restrictions will be in place for the next 6 months. The Bobcat fire in California is still less than 20% contained as it chases thousands from their homes.
It's all gone. Everything is gone.
That elderly woman in L.A. County lost her home as she was forced to flee the flames. She now lives in an RV.
I lost everything except this and my car and my life.
The fires have consumed millions of acres across California, Oregon, and Nevada. Say goodbye to Uncle Ben.
Uncle Ben's. Perfect every time.
Not anymore. The classic rice product is getting a name change and will now be called Ben's Original. The Mars Company will also drop the iconic logo featuring the black head waiter from its new packaging. The revamped Ben's Rice will hit shelves next year. Last June, the food companies that make Uncle Ben's, Aunt Jemima, and Cream of Wheat said they would rebrand their products after criticism over the use of racial stereotypes.
Michael Kastner reporting, and it appears mission is possible for the actor Tom Cruise as he prepares to go to space. The Twitter account for the Space Shuttle Almanac shared a photo of spacecrafts and countries set to launch in the next 3 years today, and under October 2021, the chart reads SpaceX Crew Dragon with a list of three names. Included on that list, the actor Tom Cruise and director Doug Liman. It's unclear what movie they're making, but I can't wait to see that. We're coming up on 25 past the hour next at noon. It's another edition of Inside Out with Martha Menikas Foster. Today's topic is church in the COVID era. Martha's speaking with Dr. David Kinnaman with the Barna Research Group about how houses of worship are utilizing social media to do church in the midst of this pandemic.
We've had more digital church in the last 6 months than probably all of human history combined. At the same time, I think it also has accelerated some of the things that were already in place. Mm-hmm. So people's connection to local churches were becoming less and less deep. They come fewer and fewer weekends per year. Mm-hmm. You know, millennials and Gen Z, the younger generations, are kind of renegotiating their relationship to church organizations and to churches. And so I think there's a lot of things that really accelerated about changes that were already taking place. How do you trust others? How do you think about the political environment? How do you think about, you know, sort of connecting in with peers through social media? I mean, all those things have been in place prior to the pandemic, mm-hmm. and I think that just accelerated those kinds of trends.
A church might be able to do something digitally, but is that feeding enough? Is it really increasing the congregant's maturity? And what about people who might have just started attending church because they have spiritual questions? Are they connecting in too? Do you have a way of knowing?
I think on some level we've actually seen that there's a real increase in online participation across a wide spectrum of people, non-Christians, skeptics, others. And so I think there's a way in which this is forcing the church to really grapple with the fact that to disciple people at all, we can't just disciple them when they're there on the campus or in their buildings. We have to disciple them in all of their lives. Mm-hmm. And so the answer to the question of, you know, can people's faith be growing and will this, you know, cause the church to have deeper metrics, deeper ways of thinking about discipleship? My answer is I hope so, because mm-hmm. I think this gives the church a chance to sort of rethink its sort of approach. I mean, being in person is wonderful and it's an important part that, you know, will never be sort of dissociated from the Christian life mm-hmm. other than in a pandemic. And yet, you know, it's like we also have to have a wide range of ways of influencing people, even in the digital space, and especially in the digital space.
So supposing that we all get back to the opportunity to be together, you're saying this is a growth area that was necessary? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I think we try to do dial-up ministry, if you can remember back to the early days of the Internet.
Yes.
We try to do dial-up ministry in a Wi-Fi world, and so young people are finding all sorts of information. I mean, it's just astounding how many hours of content that young people are taking in through YouTube, social media, other sort of forms of media, music and video games and television shows and movies, but especially YouTube. And, you know, we've seen in our research a lot of young people who are sort of captivated by the compelling nature of, you know, YouTube channels on religion. And yet there's not always great, like, sort of biblical content or people that have the kind of, you know, love of scripture that would, you know, captivate young people. So I think it's a change that's very necessary because, you know, Google has become something like the sex educator and the best friend and confidant and, you know, it's sort of your theological coach, because you can Google anything. And so recognizing that, you know, we're going to have to be able to effectively talk about the Christian worldview, why it matters, why it's trustworthy, that's just not going to be accomplished merely through, you know, a really good youth program on, you know, Wednesday nights. It's got to be something that's a more inclusive, you know, sort of moving from dial-up to Wi-Fi ministry.
Mm-hmm. So actually meeting people where they're at, and this has kind of accelerated that for the church, or it should be accelerating that for the church.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So I guess leading off from that, it sounds like you are encouraged by something. So what encourages you about the future of the Christian church in America? And then what are some of the flashing lights and warning signs, too?
Well, I think first I am very hopeful. My kind of life mission is to help the church navigate change and help, you know, sort of courageously lead the church into the future, especially the next generation. And so, you know, when I think about that, I actually get kind of excited when things are up in the air. When the sort of the status quo, and there's sort of people who will often wag their finger at me and say, well, you know, Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. And it's like, well, that's really true as a sort of a proverb, but it's also true that, you know, God's up to new things. And Isaiah 43:19 says, behold, I'm doing a new thing. And, you know, do you perceive it? So I'm a more of a new things kind of guy than I am, you know, let's sort of try to preserve our way of life and our way of thinking, because new paradigms are always changing. And so I think the things that are flashing lights are, you know, the degree to which we try to go back to something like a normal after the pandemic, where we try to just sort of restart our churches in the same way they've always been doing them. Lots of great stuff that happens. It's not a critique.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what does this pandemic mean for us to do in a different way?
You've been listening to Dr. David Kinnaman. He's with the Barna Research Group, talking to our own Martha Menikas Foster about the online church in the COVID era. It's how a lot of us are doing church these days. Martha's interview is available for download, free of charge, we might add, fln.org/podcast. Just click on the news icon.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Pleasant day underway across our region, and there's really no major weather issues ahead over the next several days. A weak disturbance may produce a stray shower tomorrow afternoon, but it won't be until Sunday that any substantial showers come our way for the areas that are dry and in some cases droughtish. Our call for this afternoon, mostly sunny and warm, the high temperature in the 70s. Tonight, some clouds develop after a mainly clear evening, low temps 50s. Tomorrow, mix of clouds and sunshine, maybe a brief shower in the afternoon, high in the 70s to near 80. And Friday's mostly sunny and warm with a high temperature in the mid-70s to the lower 80s.
All right, Kevin Williams, thank you for that. Fine at noon. Doctors in India have successfully removed a toothbrush from the stomach of a man. Imagine that, a toothbrush. The 39-year-old was brushing his teeth when the 7-inch brush slid down his throat. How that happened, I have no clue. X-rays showed it got caught in the man's abdomen. Surgeons made a small incision in his stomach, removed that toothbrush. He recovered a few days later, good as new. That's our world for Wednesday, September 23rd. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.